You're listening to the FQXI podcast. In 2013, FQXI member Sarah Seeger at MIT was awarded a MacArthur Fellowship.
A MacArthur Genius Grant.
Now, Seeger was also one of the very first recipients of an FQXI large grant way back in 2006 to fund her research into the characterization and search for life on hot, rocky exoplanets. So we asked reporter Colin Stewart to catch up with Seeger and ask her how the hunt for extraterrestrials is coming along.
Sarah Seeger is Professor of Planetary Science and Physics at MIT and one of astronomy's most renowned planet hunters. She also recently received a prestigious MacArthur Genius Grant. I started by congratulating her on the award and asked her what it means to her personally.
Well, it'll make a difference in two or three different ways. One of the ways is the MacArthur Fellowship. It ends up giving me a platform to have a voice. What I mean by that is that although I'm already well-known in my field and well-respected, the MacArthur Fellow just gives a kind of stamp or blessing from the outside. And fortunately or unfortunately, some people actually need that in order to feel like they should call upon you to do various things. So in that sense, I think the MacArthur is really going to open up doors for me. In another sense, it's been less good, and that is given me a bit of notoriety in situations that I wasn't known before, like my neighborhood, my children's school. And in those cases, I honestly would rather just be anonymous.
The grant totals $650,000. How are you going to spend the money?
It turns out they let you use the money however you want in order for you to support yourself to be creative. And I have decided to spend all of my money on the home front. And the reason I'm doing that is because right now, if I have to do things at home, like laundry, cooking, dishes, a lot of endless household chores, my brain is filled with thinking about what I have to do next rather than I could be just sitting around after dinner or relaxing or sleeping and thinking about a problem I'm working on. Like the other night, I woke up in the middle of the night and I just figured out this complicated geometry problem. And that's a lot better, trust me, than thinking about food management. So actually, most people use it for work, but for me as a single mother with two children at home, it's just a blessing for me. I want my mind to continue to be able to just wander to something very interesting I've been thinking about and not wander to, oops, I forgot to get milk from the store, because that's what ends up happening.
In the past, you've also received a grant from FQXI. What did you spend that money on?
I am so thrilled to tell you about what I ended up using the FQXI money for, because at the time when I wrote the grant, I knew there was a big new field in biosignature gases. This is actually an established field. It's a field about how we're going to find signs of life on planets that are kind of like Earth that are orbiting stars other than the sun. People are very focused on Earth's biosignature gases. On Earth, we have oxygen. It's produced by plants and photosynthetic life in huge abundance, such that our atmosphere has 20% oxygen by volume when it should have none. But the question is, out there, when we are able to find Earth-like planets and look at their atmospheres for gases that don't belong that could be biosignature gases, we really need to cast a wide net. What are the chances we're going to have one just like Earth with oxygen? I don't know what the chances are, but I know we're not going to have thousands of planets to study. It's going to be more like 10 or tens of planets. So at the time, I proposed to FQXI to start something kind of new and to do some thermodynamics-based biosignature gas research. And I used the money for 6 months of a postdoc. He worked on microbial science, taking microbes from the deep sea and trying to understand what they did and how their metabolism worked and what kind of gases they used and output.
And what's happened with that work?
So I'm really happy to tell you about that because the fruition of that initial investment finally came. And it's in the form of a couple of papers that I just got accepted in the Astrophysical Journal literally a month ago.
Can you tell us a bit more about that?
We call it a biomass model estimate. You can actually use thermodynamics to give a biomass estimate. That is, how much mass do you need to be producing a certain flux? We said, let's look at exoplanet biosignature gases a different way. Let us ask ourselves, how much of a certain gas do we need to detect in the atmosphere? And then we say, well, how much biomass would we need to produce that gas flux? And is that biomass physically plausible? So with this framework, we're now able to expand beyond oxygen and think of other gases, and we'll be able to tell you, look, this is not a plausible biosignature gas because on this particular planet with this kind of atmosphere and this kind of star, we'll need 100 kilometers thick biomass around the whole planet. And we don't think that's physically possible. So actually, that grew out of my original FQXI grant, this biomass-based model of how to move beyond terracentric biosignature gases.
And what did the second paper cover?
That paper asked the question, well, could we have biosignature gases in a planet different from Earth, a planet with a hydrogen-rich atmosphere? You know, Earth does not have hydrogen and helium in the atmosphere because it's a light gas, and Earth can't hold on to it. Those gases escape to space. But we believe that there are not only planets that do maintain hydrogen, but there are certain exoplanet observations for which a puffy hydrogen atmosphere is very favorable for observation. So we're motivated to understand whether or not biosignature gases could exist. And we were able to show, as a kind of proof of concept way, that if biosignature gases are produced, they could certainly accumulate in a hydrogen-rich atmosphere. And for some of those gases, it only requires a sort of very plausible amount of biomass.
So really, you want to move away from an obsession with oxygen?
Right. Exactly. And it's not that I don't believe oxygen's a great biosignature gas. I do. I just have a concern that we don't expect nature to repeat itself identically everywhere. And that, at least in my lifetime, I'm not going to have an infinite number of planets to look at. It will be just a handful. And so I want to make sure that we know what we're looking for.
How do you know this abundance of gas is caused by life and not some other natural process like geology?
Yes, well, that is such a great question. The bottom line is that life has the same chemicals to work with as geophysics does. So we see over and over again the same basic molecules that are used by life. They're also used by geophysics. Reactions are happening all around the Earth. So typically we end up with a lot of false positives, and that's why we revert to the concept that you need so much of a gas that it just, you can't argue that it can be produced any way other than life. So you could safely say that oxygen is 9 or 10 orders of magnitude above what it should be. So we're looking for gases that don't belong, and so we'd have to see a gas that just makes no sense whatsoever, or that's in so much abundance in proportion to the other gases in the atmosphere.
Biosignature detection is some years away. So what are you working on that we can do now?
One of the things I love about FQXI is the organization supports foundational questions for which answers might not be obtainable until the future. Observing biosignature gases in exoplanet atmospheres is quite a long way off. So a lot of my research focuses more on what we now are excited to call mainstream exoplanet science. And in particular, there's a few objects of interest that we have good spectra or good atmosphere data. And one of those is Kepler-7b. And my students and postdocs here at MIT, in particular, Brice Demery, Nicole Lewis, Julian DeWitt, did a lot of work on trying to understand Kepler-7b using Kepler data and data from the Spitzer Space Telescope. And what the team found is that it's kind of crazy, but it really appears like Kepler-7b has clouds on it and they're unevenly distributed. So it's pretty exciting that we can actually make observations that exoplanets have clouds in their atmosphere.
Why is exoplanet research important? Why have you dedicated your career to hunting out alien worlds?
People have wondered for thousands of years, are we alone? And this is really the first time in human history that we're on the verge of being able to answer that question. We'd like to know, did life originate and flourish elsewhere beyond Earth, or did it not? We're the first group of people that gets to actually look at planets and try to see if there are signs of life elsewhere. People are doing this also for solar system planets, Mars, possibly Europa and Titan and other places. But the exoplanets just offer a huge quantity to look at. And it's a great question in a way, because if we see something that looks like it has signs of life, we'll be so thrilled, because when there's one, there's more. But if we see nothing and no signs at all, it'll take the next generations much more effort to try to answer the question, because their reach will have to be much greater to involve many, many more planets.
So what have we learned so far about how common or unique we are?
Before, people thought our solar system would be everywhere, that we would see copies of our solar system with the giant planets far from the star and small planets closer to the star. And it turns out that we have not yet found any solar system copies, and we think they may even be somewhat rare in our galaxy. This is pretty shocking when you think about it. To me, one of the most surprising and significant findings in exoplanet science is that the most common kind of planet around sun-like stars in our galaxy is actually not Jupiter-sized planets. It's small planets, about 2 to 3 times the size of Earth, for which we have no solar system counterpart. And we don't even really know how those planets form. It may be that smaller planets are even more common. We don't know that yet. But all the techniques are pointing towards saying that the most common type of planet is not a Jupiter. It's a much smaller planet.
Finally, you started your career in cosmology. When you switched over to exoplanets, could you ever have imagined how big it would get?
No, I never would have envisioned that the field exploded in this way. Looking back, I worked in cosmology only briefly as a master's level student. And when exoplanets were discovered, I switched to work on exoplanets for my PhD thesis. But it's so interesting because I think what ended up happening was the best and brightest and the risk takers and the most enthusiastic people jumped on the field and were willing to just work in obscurity or face the challenges and the biases that other people put forward and just keep working. And as soon as we found that nature was so generous to us, nature gave us planets all over the place, easy to find planets, big planets, hot planets. Every technique could find planets. And then more and more people just kept flooding into the field, and then it just snowballed. And that's why the field has exploded, because people are so interested in the topic and because nature made planets literally everywhere.
That was Sarah Seeger chatting with Colin Stewart. We have linked to more info about Seeger's original FQXI grant on the podcast page, www.fqxi.org/community/podcast.